Welcome back. This is Mark Steiner, and we are here to tackle what happened yesterday nationally and locally in these elections. Many people were stunned, not everybody, many people were stunned to see how much Brown lost by last night. I watched our guest, Dr. John Bullock, on TV, on Channel 2, spouting out his words of wisdom. He's with us now, professor of political science at Towson University. Just had a baby, was on television, covering the election all night long, and showed up in the studio. What's that about?
Not getting much sleep, but happy to be here.
Well, congratulations on your new son, right?
Yes, George. And my wife, George. Jacqueline's listening, so.
And congratulations, Jacqueline. She did all the work. But
indeed.
That's great. I'm very happy for
Thank
both
you.
Of you. We're also joined here in studio by Bob Somervie, editor of the Daily Howler, who's been critiquing in a very humorous way politics for many, many moons. Good to have you back in the studio, Bob.
Thank you.
Zoe Carpenter's with us. She is reporter for Nation's Bureau in D.C. Zoe, welcome back.
Thanks for having me again.
Is Jordan with us yet? Jordan's there? Good. Jordan Bloom is here, opinion editor at the Daily Caller and a board member of Alumni for Liberty, a project of Students for Liberty. And Jordan, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
Thanks, Mark.
So we had an election yesterday. We'll get to Governor Brown in Maryland a little bit later. We want you to join us here at 410-319-8888. Write to us here at talk@steinershow.org. You can log on to our Facebook pages. Tweet me at Mark Steiner. But please, your thoughts on yesterday's election, 410-319-8888. I was going to play this piece. I don't know if we can play it or not. We can. Let me just play this David Letterman opening for a moment, and we'll talk about this.
This is what happens when we have the midterm elections. The Republicans, of course, have turned against Obama, and also the Democrats have now turned against Obama. It's a lonely, lonely gig being president, ladies and gentlemen. Let's take a look at it. Gas, under $3 a gallon. Under $3 a gallon. Yeah. Unemployment, under 6%. Whoever thought... Stock market, breaking records every day. No wonder the guy is so unpopular.
Yeah, well.
So that was just part of David Letterman's opening last night. I thought I would start out with that because many people tied their campaigns to smashing Obama and Democrats running away from Obama. In this election, actually. We'll get to some more substantive stuff, but it's kind of on the surface, this is what a lot of people are talking about in the establishment press, but it's worth kind of exploring for a moment at what that means. Jordan, let me start with you as our resident Republican for the day.
Yeah, well, a lot of the sort of centrist pundits were talking about the Republicans' biggest problem being that they didn't have a national agenda, but at least the results last night seemed to show that that didn't really hurt them at all. And I think that's actually a good thing. You know, the Republican Party is structurally pretty different than the Democratic Party. The donors and the base in the Democratic Party are more or less on the same page on a policy level. The Republican Party, totally different. So sort of, I think it is probably a mistake to you know, be a little too forthright about some of these things. But even if it's not just a referendum on, it doesn't really seem to be just a referendum on Obama.
Right.
Because you have Republicans taking governorships in blue states like Massachusetts and Illinois. I would say it's that's part of it, but there's also this undercurrent of, anti-government sentiment, I guess. You've got the legalization initiatives passing in D.C., Oregon, and Alaska.
Right.
So there's a lot of other stuff that's going on.
There is. We can get some of that stuff as well. But let me go to Zoe and then come around to the folks that are around the table here. Zoe?
Sure. You know, I think that I agree that the anti-government sentiment was strong and important in this election. Certainly, Obama is unpopular, and the geography was very difficult for Democrats running in states that had been surprised Democratic transitions in 2008. But I think also there's just general frustration with the way that Washington works, or rather doesn't work, and that's directed to the party in power, which, you know, in the White House is the Democrats, and so I think that explains a lot of why the Republican platform of just bashing Barack Obama over and over again and not actually having much of a policy platform was successful.
Dr. John, the man.
You know, there's a lot going on here. One, we recognize that just historically, the party of the president loses seats, whether it's in Congress or we're talking about governor's offices, they lose during the midterm election. A lot of that has to do with folks just wanting to go a different way given who's been in power. Again, it happens whether you're Republican or Democrat. But what is interesting, you mentioned some of the things, or David Letterman mentioned, you know, some of the economic themes. And what's interesting is that many Republicans ran on the economy but really focusing on taxes. We saw that in the state of Maryland. So whether it's real or it's perceived, that kind of single issue, that kind of staying on target with that message really worked out well for Republicans across the country. And again, you also have other things that are happening nationally that may not affect people directly, but the perception. So whether we're talking about ISIS or Ebola and those kinds of things, and then the general perception about the president and also the obstructionism. I'll be interested to see what happens when Republicans now have majority in both houses of Congress, what's able to get done, because I'm thinking that you're really going to have see even more gridlock. You're not necessarily going to see a whole lot of policy production, but again, now the ball's in their court to see what happens.
Yeah, when was the last time anything ever got done? I mean, that doesn't seem to be a part of the system anymore. And I didn't know David Letterman was getting his talking points quite so directly from the DNC, because those are kind of cherry-picked.
He's been watching
Rachel Maddow. I'm not sure which, because, right. You know, median incomes are nowhere near. You know, this isn't Obama's fault. I'm not blaming him.
Right.
But the fact is the economy, gas prices are low. Well, if the whole economy was cars, then that would be good. But that's not the whole economy.
No, you're not. And what you're saying, I want to kind of get into that more deeply about as our former President Jimmy Carter talked about the malaise in America, where he was battered for back in 1980. I want to read some of my stats here and talk a bit about those. Let me go to the phones first. But I do want to come right back to the point that I played that first to talk about this is kind of in some ways, it's humorous, but it's also the shallowness. So did I say that right? We were all up too late last night. I can't even say words
not
anymore.
Me.
But that most media is not talking about what's under those stats, what's really going on in America, why people are feeling so disgruntled across the board. 410-319-8888. Glendora, you're on the air.
Oh, wow. I'm the first one.
You are, Glendora. Good morning.
Good morning, everyone.
Good morning.
Yeah, I watched the results last night, and I can't say that I was, you know, shocked. I was surprised at the margin of the victory, but I am a registered Democrat, but I have not thought of myself as anything other than a thinking person
uh-huh.
for years.
Uh-huh.
So it's the idea that so many people think that folks are against Obama. This is why they voted one way as opposed to another way. But for me, it was the idea of looking at what is it that we need? What is it that's been done over the years that have not helped us, you know, as a state or even as a country? well, as a state or as a country, yes.
Right, right, right.
But I chose to vote for the other person, the person who won.
You're talking about in Maryland, you're talking about the gubernatorial election.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, I voted for Hogan, even though I'm registered as a Democrat.
Well, let me ask this question, Glendora. Even though we're talking about national at this moment, I do want to ask this question. That's fine, that's fine. Glad you called in. Well, let me just very quickly, why did you vote for Hogan over Lieutenant Governor Brown?
Well, first of all, I prayed about it.
Okay.
Secondly, I didn't really make up my mind until yesterday, but I kind of felt that as far as Brown was concerned, the first thing that upset me with him was because of the big mess with the,
healthcare system,
the insurance thing.
Mm-hmm.
The first thing he should have done was apologize. I mean, I've even taught my children that when things go wrong, you accept your responsibility.
Right.
You don't throw it off on other people. And when you've been put in charge of something, that means you've got more responsibility than anybody else to oversee that particular thing. That was one thing. But I also saw him as a continuation of Martin O'Malley.
Well, Glenda, what you've done is help set off a conversation for starting about the half hour, about 15, 20 minutes, we're going to jump into the state and what happened there. But I'm going to use what you said to jump into that conversation because I think that you hit two key points. But let me just...
Can I just piggyback quickly on what Glendora said?
Sure, but I do want to move into this.
My first vote was in 1972.
Mine too.
I don't believe I've ever voted for a Republican.
I have.
Even I thought about voting for Republicans yesterday. I have no idea why. I mean, I didn't. In the end, I did not. But even I was so disgusted with something that even I thought, maybe I'll just go vote for a bunch of Now, I didn't, and I don't know why I wanted to do that. But in terms of the malaise and disgust, that's what was in my head, and I don't even know why.
Well, let's talk about why. I think there's a lot of people who think the way you think, Valerie and I talked about that this morning when we got up. She was working the polls all day yesterday for a local election, and so let's talk about that. I mean, right. So back in 2009, let me just become a stat here, right? 2009, 48.5% of each set of respondents said yes, the country's on the right track. No, it's not. 2008, the last polls were in 2009.
You mean the former country?
Right. Today it stands at 27.8%, and people who think we're on the wrong track are at 66%, and that even though there are more people employed than ever, 41% think American economy is getting better, but 54% see it is worsening, and you can look at all these kind of studies coming out that people are not feeling secure in America. They're not feeling secure in Maryland. They're not feeling secure in America. They don't know who to trust. You're watching, you see this great passion that happened in 2008 that pushed Barack Obama over the top. And now you're seeing that passion for a lot of people pushed him over the top has become disillusionment and disappointment and complete disgruntledness by people who are conservative in this country around a number of issues around that. And I think that there's something happening in America where people are just really disgusted with the way things are and afraid of the future. And let me turn to you first, Zoe, then we'll come around the room. I think that's part of the dilemma we're facing here in this country.
I agree, and I also think that part of the problem was that Democratic candidates didn't do a good job of saying exactly what they were for in
many
cases.
Right.
So you have, in their desperation to cut their ties with Obama, they kind of let the Republicans define the conversation on things like the Keystone Pipeline, on things like the travel ban on Ebola. And so it really reinforced the idea that Democrats don't know what they're doing. And I think sort of an important piece of evidence is that many liberal issues were big winners in the midterm elections. For example, the minimum wage. We had overwhelming support of the minimum wage increases in several red states. And yet, because of the many distractions, as we've discussed already today, the Democrats didn't double down on that economic message in as coherent a way as they planned to earlier in the year. And I think that that was the real problem for them.
I think you kind of tapped into also, these feelings that people have. And you mentioned 2008 and people were really ginned up for the election and thinking about, the future prospects and all that. That in and of itself is part of the issue with American politics, where we're focusing on personalities and things like that and just the media hoopla as opposed to looking at the policies. And I think when you look at the economy, you could argue that even though the economy is far from perfect, it is better than it was in 2008. But in terms of the Republican side, they've been very good at targeting Obama. The goal was to really make him a one-term president. He still was able to get reelected. But again, the perception that's out there that, okay, the Democrats are not doing a great job. We're in this kind of place. And you mentioned Jimmy Carter. And Jimmy Carter was basically in the same situation. He talked to the American populace. People thought that he was kind of a downer. He was talking all his policy stuff, talking about the future and the environment. Let's get somebody that makes us feel good, right? So you get somebody like Reagan. You see some of the disastrous effects in terms of some of the disparities and some of the social issues that were happening at the time. So oftentimes when you talk, a solid policy, people don't always respond to that. And then the political climate today, it's really about, it's about feelings and tapping into some of that. I think it's also important to really have a clear and defined message about what you're voting for. And I think the Democrats could have done a much better job at that.
But I think I'm going to bring the other two guests in here, Jordan and Bob, as well, to come into this. But I think that one of the things here, the other studies show that even though more people are employed, people are working longer hours and getting less money.
Right.
And people are frustrated with their existence. I mean, that's the bottom line.
Well, I mentioned Rachel Maddow, and I saw her last week listing the same statistics that Letterman did about how great the economy is. And I couldn't help thinking, Rachel, you're paid $7 million a year. It may seem like a good economy to you, but it's not a good economy for people who aren't being paid $7 million. You have to get up there and blab with all that crap that you just got handed by the DNC. And that's part, for me, that's part of the malaise and disgust, just the disintegration of the discourse everywhere. There is no discourse. You know, the as always said, it looked like Democrats are not for anything. Democrats are at this point. They're not. What are they for? I couldn't tell you what Democrats. What are they for? They're nothing.
I'm afraid I have to agree in the largest sense with that. Let me go back to Jordan before we hit the phones again. Jordan.
Yeah, I'd say the economic issues are extremely important. I saw a little bit of polling. I think it was in North Carolina that people were specifically voting with control of the Senate in mind. So if you think about some of the things that could come down the pike that Obama might have to sign, a bright spot in the last 2 years where nothing got done. One of the few bright spots was a trade agreement with South Korea. You can tend to get pretty good agreement on some of these, you know, on some of these basic economic things. In the next couple of years, we might be able to see something like corporate tax reform, wealth repatriation from abroad, maybe things like that. The trade agreements, more trade agreements like the Trans-Pacific Pact, things like that, I think could definitely come down the pike. And Obama, regardless of his sort of how secretly populist he is on economic issues, I think he'd have a very difficult time turning those things down.
And I think that one of the things here, we'll go to the phones right here, Zoe, is that whatever I was saying here, I think some of it harkens back, not completely up Obama's doorstep, because this is a complex question. It's not all about President Barack Obama, but I just want to go back to for a moment just on one aspect of it, which is that in 2008 when he was elected, people on the left wanted to see Cheney and Bush and everybody else indicted, and I understand that sentiment completely, though, as Katrina Vandenhoeven and I talked about in the show earlier in the week, who's editor and publisher of The Nation magazine, that would have caused a civil war in America had he done that. But people did want to see something different than what had happened during the Bush years around that. And B, even though he wasn't going to put people in jail who run banks, they wanted to see something more happen around banks being controlled and their mortgages being saved. And he had America in the palm of his hand at that moment, and both houses of Congress, and nothing happened, Zoe. And I think that is part of why I think on the Democratic side of the voters, people are so disenchanted.
I think that's probably true, and I think that's going to be a lasting problem for the Democratic Party as the populist wing and the corporate Democratic side of things fights it out for control. And I think right now, as has been the case for a while, the corporate Democrats are running the party, and that limits the appeal to the left side of the base.
And one of the things I'll say here, and go to the phones right here, unless you guys have a quick comment, is I think that. And I think sometimes it's not even left and right. I think many Americans agree on what they want to see, and they're not seeing it. You know, I mean, it's because most people who supported Obama, I wouldn't put on the left, even though some people want to put them on the left. They wanted to see changes so their homes were secure, so that the environment was secure, their schools were better, and they're not. Maryland, all this money we're paying in taxes, they don't see their schools getting any better.
Right. I'm glad you framed it that way, because think about this. You know, people projected a lot of aspirations and ideals onto Obama that really didn't exist. Obama's really always been a centrist and been a sort of a moderate Democrat. People really wanted him to be this progressive, more liberal. And I think Zoe makes a great point. When you look at the Democratic Party, it's always been a coalition party. You think about the urban north and the solid south in years past. And now you think about the corporate wing of the party and the more progressive wing of the party that's attempting to be cobbled together. But I think a lot of it has really devolved into let's protect the party. Look around the state of Maryland. Vote for the Democrats. What does that mean? I mean, are all Democrats the same? Do they all stand for the same things? And so it's sort of devolved into a team aspect as opposed to policy production.
We need popular conservatives, progressives, and let the corporate people have their own party.
Yeah,
take it from there.
I couldn't agree more.
And you say it isn't really left and right, but in so much of media now, it really is left and right. It's an easy media sell, and a lot of corporate media, including left corporate media, is really selling left and right. It's the easiest thing. It's the easiest media product.
Don't need analysis.
Yeah, no, it's the easiest media product, and it's just people are having it rammed down their throats, and it's just not helpful. It's just the end of discussion.
So do we have time to take a call here? I take a break. So we're going to take a break. And so this conversation, I think, in the next half an hour is going to weave in and out of local and national. I know, Zoe, you're in D.C., so you know a bunch about Maryland politics. Jordan, I just want to let you know that as well, because people are, but you're in Virginia, so you have a sense of that as well. And I think there are a lot of people who are just really want to get into why we saw the election we did in Maryland. And I think that's emblematic of what happened across the country. This is not just about Maryland. But we have to have a very quick break. We're going to come back with our guests. We're going to go to Kenny and Andre, the next two callers up. Stay with us. And I think that we're also going to be joined by the Reverend Todd Geary, who's going to come in to join a conversation as well. Stay with us. We'll be right back. We'll be right back. We went out with Rumble, coming back in with Batman, Lynn Cray, passed away on this day in 2005. So on our music, part of our Music Day in History tributes. We are here with Dr. John Bullock, Zoe Carpenter. John Bullock from Towson University, professor of political science. Zoe Carpenter, reporter for the nation's Washington, D.C. Bureau. Jordan Bloom, opinion editor at the Daily Caller. And Bob Schermanby, editor of the Daily Howler. We had the Daily Howler and the Daily Caller on the show at one time.
Perfect.
That is very interesting. 410-319-8888 is the number here to join in this conversation. Let me get my other computer up here. Here we go. Let's go to Kenny in Baltimore. You're on the air.
How you doing?
Very well, Kenny. Welcome.
Hey, they have a senator from Vermont. His name is Bernie Sanders.
Yes.
Anytime they interview him, they try to get him to talk about ISIS, and they try to get him to talk about Russia. They try to get him, but he won't leave the economic issues. He won't leave them. He said, I know what you're trying to do, have me talk about something else, but I'm not going to stop talking about how the middle class is being taken advantage of. He always talk about the middle class. I have not heard a Democrat that was running talk about the government closing down, shutting down, lost $24 billion, that Obama pulled the soldiers out of Iraq and Afghanistan and it's going to shut down. I haven't seen them do anything passionate about the people that couldn't get unemployment insurance. I haven't heard a Democrat say that throughout the whole election. You know, it's like they really didn't care about those issues. And I think that's why they got their clocks
cleaned.
I think that's what happened to them. But I tell you one thing, and I'm a Democrat, but if Mr. Hogan in Maryland, if he does something for the colleges, for black colleges, and get rid of some of these taxes, he might be reelected again, and then his running mate might get elected. So I tell you, you know, there's a chance that you know, the governor could be red for a long time if he gets together and do some of these issues that the Democrats wouldn't do in the state of Maryland. Talk to you guys later.
Thank you so much. I think whether it was Brown here or whether it was the Udall in Connecticut or the other Democrats that lost, in many ways, is because they could not hit those issues. They also got drowned out by tons of money, which we can talk about in a minute as well. The money in this race was just obscene. But that is it. I mean, we had here in Brown talking about, I'm for the middle class, you know, Zoe, but that's about all we got.
Right. I mean, I think what Kenny the caller pointed to about the shutdown being forgotten is really important. You know, there were no repercussions for that kind of you know, absolute political irresponsibility from the Republicans in Congress, and I think that we're liable to see more of that in the next 2 years because it's paid off for them so far.
Bob, what were you about to say? I could see you were about to say something.
No, I was just jotting down a shutdown. I mean, you know, when we had the government shutdown in 95 under Clinton, that was a huge, big deal. We, in the last decade, we've had so many shutdowns, threatened shutdowns, closed downs, lockdowns. It just all flows by. I don't think anyone even pays attention anymore. So it's just all become part of the haze. It doesn't surprise me there was no price paid for that. No one understood it in the first place. And then after the one shutdown, then you get the next shutdown. There was a succession of shutdowns. No one is even – I don't think anyone's even following anymore at this point.
Mm-hmm. But
well, the shutdown's bad, I guess, but I think we're more likely to see a budget in the next 2 years. What's more dangerous, I think, is what if a Supreme Court justice died tomorrow? The GOP could conceivably sit on it for 2 years. And frankly, I think they should, but I think that's a much bigger constitutional crisis.
But also what we're seeing is obstructionism. I mean, so you know, those government shutdowns, again, like happens really on a partisan basis. And again, we haven't seen much getting done. And I think people are really frustrated by that. But the Democrats weren't really good at talking about that. I think part of the way that Republicans have painted a Democratic president like Obama is to say, you know, a lot of this is really his fault. And so he's not leading. And when he did have both houses of Congress, he didn't lead then. And so making some of these assertions that he hasn't really gotten things done, while at the same time, time playing an obstructionist role and painting him in a position where it's kind of hard to say, well, they're being obstructionist. Well, you can't blame them because you're the president. And so he is kind of caught in this place, and the Democrats have been sort of caught in this place, too.
Let me open the phone to you again, 410-319-8888, and go to Bruce. You're on the air.
Yeah, so whatever happened, happened. But so, you know, what? That first off, as far as Maryland, Brown ran some really negative campaigns that are unbelievably distortive. And the Sun papers I'm quoting, I forgot the quote, but basically, they said, what was the first word? I forget. But anyway, they're saying it was so dishonest. The Sun papers said that it was that deceptive. So that's part of the issue. And then, you know, the other thing, I'm an independent registered. I voted for Barack Obama. So, you know, look at foreign policy. Look at some of the domestic issues. Look at, and you know what? The Democrats have trashed the Republicans on your show all the time. That the Republicans are, people call it and call them the Confederate Party and assume they're unfeeling to poor people and they have no empathy. And they're bigots and racists. And I've listened to this over and over again. It's just, it gets ridiculous. And too many times they play the race card. And you know what? That's another reason why Brown lost. And that's another reason why the Republican Party gained a number of seats. So let's talk reality.
Okay, let's talk about Bruce's reality, John.
Right. So I will say this. Looking at what Brown did in Maryland, I think it really kind of rubbed a lot of people the wrong way, especially those mailers that were making the sort of direct racial appeal at the end. All throughout the campaign, he really de-emphasized race, and then you start seeing these mailers and have, you know, pictures of lynchings and things like that, which did happen in the past, but it's not as tied to this race. Now, let me flip it in this way. You look at someone like Mary Landrieu in Louisiana, who was running for a Senate seat, and again, is going to be in a runoff, but she mentioned some factual things like historically the South has not been good to African Americans and it's been challenging to women. That's a historical fact. And so we look at southern districts and recognize that a lot of those are red states, and a lot of that's to do with the shift that happened after the passage of civil rights. And so people still remember that. We know that many of those were Southern Democrats prior to the 1964 Civil Rights Act and the 65 Voting Rights Act. Many of them have now been Republicans and now are antithetical not only to Democrats but some of those issues you talked about. So when you see voter ID laws, when you see those kinds of anti-poor policies, people recognize that even though Brown tried to attach them to Hogan, it might not have necessarily been appropriate for this race. But in many places across the country, that actually is accurate.
Yeah, I have to say I agree with the caller. I mean, not necessarily in terms of the Maryland gubernatorial race, but Democratic politics in general and Democratic media politics is just becoming negative, negative, negative. R bombs. It's a very simple way to sell a pleasing message to liberal viewers. But what is anyone proposing? It's just they've lost the ability to make a positive proposal. We run on demonization of the other.
Yeah, there's an entire genre of writing. I think it was at the top of Salon yesterday. Is don't be fooled. This isn't a referendum on the president. It's actually about race. I wonder if there are people just going into the media for the purpose of writing these stories. But it's kind of crazy, right? The only possible explanation for not wanting higher taxes and less civil liberty is because of racism. Obviously there are big concerns about voter ID and things like that, but nobody bothers to make connections like that in these pieces. It's just kind of this crazy hysteria.
Well, I think the issues of race to me were in this race in a very interesting ways, and I wanted to get into this in another show, but not now. But I kind of what I thought about this morning when I saw the picture of Mia Love winning in Utah as an African American woman of Haitian descent who married the Mormon who came to her door from Utah to convert her family, and she married him and went to Utah, and then was elected in Utah as a conservative Republican. And I thought to myself, you know, here's what's going to begin to happen. We have this situation where you're going to see more and more people of color winning in Republican elections in a party to show this diversity in a party that has no diversity. Mm-hmm. And you have the Democrats who have this most diverse coalition of people in their party, but who don't work at policies or do things to help those constituencies at all. Mm-hmm. And that's the contradiction you're seeing, which is why you have, I think, the anger on one side and the disgruntledness on the other side, Zoe. I think that's part of the dynamic we're seeing being played out here.
Right. I think a good example would be the executive order on immigration.
Right.
And I think Colorado is a legacy of the fact that the White House really turned its back on the immigrant community that had been so supportive. And I think the Democrats have been taking the Latino community for granted. They've been taking for granted the fact that Republicans are so much worse on immigration. That doesn't mean that Latinos and other members of the immigrant community will get out and vote for anybody. And I think that had a real impact on the Senate race in Colorado.
I look at the immigration issue the exact opposite way, just that there's nothing that depresses the wages of African Americans more than mass immigration, because they tend to be low skilled. Those are the exact jobs immigrants are taking. Black people are lower on the Democratic totem pole than immigrants.
Can I push back on that?
Yes, you may, Zoe.
There's actually evidence that black workers would benefit from fixing our broken immigration system. Having an immigration system that keeps millions of people in the shadows, suppresses wages, and it permits labor exploitation. And so I think it's very clear that all workers would benefit from fixing that system.
Right, and I'd have to agree with Zoe as well. Again, when you look at immigrants have always, historically in America, wherever they're from, have taken the least paying, the least rewarding, and the toughest, dirtiest jobs, and oftentimes have been paid really minimal wages. And when you have people who are undocumented, they are further abused. Again, we look at some of the economic policies that can not only help immigrants, but also help others at the lower end of the economic totem pole. So we're talking about minimum wages and things like that that really matter. Again, to Mark's point about some of the people who have come up in the Republican Party, and now we're seeing them reach out to people of color. Part of that is recognizing, if you look back to 2008 and you look back to 2012, you see how the Republican Party lost on those places in our population that are growing. Demographically speaking, we're looking at the rise of the growing black population, growing Hispanic population, which is going to be the majority in quite a few years. Then we're also looking at Asian population, but also looking at women and young people. And so if you're going to win elections in the future, you have to be a party as a bigger tent. And so by having some of these newer faces, that's going to expand their base. But let's still be clear. Race still does matter. And there are some ways that that the president has been depicted and that have been critiqued that have not been commensurate with what we've seen with presidents throughout history. And there's something that makes him different than all the rest. And there are subtle clues that were and certain comments that have been used, whether we're talking about incompetence or talking about being lazy, or even the treatment from other elected officials. And so there's a sort of lack of respect there. But again, I do understand. I think it's important to have policies that speak to the people you represent. And I think the Democrats oftentimes don't have those policies in place or don't stand for them maybe as strongly as they could and should.
Let me open the phones again at 410-319-8888. Your thoughts on this election, and we'll go to Bob Sommerby here, 410-319-8888. Andre, you're on the air.
Yes, good morning.
Good morning, Andre.
Good morning. This is my opinion. And I've said this actually weeks before this election. I believe that the Democrats lost because they took the African-American vote for granted. In this state, in Maryland, is actually a microcosm, in my opinion, of the
right nation.
I'll give an example.
Go ahead.
In the primary election, Anthony Brown didn't even come to Baltimore for the primary debate. He said he had other things to do. And this is a city, 67% African-American. And I understand. So basically, when I talked to people in the street, the message that they got was, I have other things more important than Baltimore, even though I went to the debates in Montgomery County, but I don't have time for Baltimore because y'all going to vote for me anyway. And I believe that was the same message that a lot of African-Americans got, not only in Maryland, but also nationwide. Nationwide African-Americans, and I will disagree with your guest, I do believe that the perception is that African-Americans, with an African-American president, by the way, are at the bottom of the totem pole. They see gay and lesbians getting rights. They see marriage equality. They see don't ask, don't tell, get demolished. They see the Justice Department coming to Arizona and other places like that to protect immigrants, and i.e. Hispanics. And then they don't see their concerns addressed on a national level. Now, that doesn't mean that they won't come out to vote for Obama because of the historical nature of it. But if you look at the national, look at where the Democrats lost last night, North Carolina, states that came out heavily for Obama, And I can guarantee when you look at the statistics that there was a very low turnout in many of those states of African Americans. And I guarantee you when the numbers are coming from Maryland, you would probably see that there was a low turnout in places like Baltimore and parts like Prince George's County. And the thing is, you never forget who took you to the dance. And I think that's what the Democrats did. Now, I'm not saying the Republicans are better.
Right.
They surely not. However, you got to give people a reason to go out to vote. And when you got a segment of the African-American community, maybe not most of them, but enough of them that will make a difference, when you have them thinking like, hey, it doesn't matter if I vote or not, I'm still complaining the same issues I did when George Bush was in office. So what difference does it make? When you have that issue, you're going to have what you had last night in Maryland and nationwide, and it will happen again unless Democrats take us more seriously.
Andre, thank you. I think on many levels, many of the things you said are correct. I may take issue with a couple of things you said, but I think that Democrats do take the African American vote for granted, and we can see by the lack of turnout that it hit them in the derriere.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be interesting to see what turnout figures look like from yesterday. But the quick exit polls I saw, and exit polls are polls; they're not hard data. Republicans were a lot more diverse in who voted for them, at least among Asian Americans and Hispanics. They did better among Hispanics. I saw them almost breaking even with Asian Americans. And, you know, the black vote, of course, Obama drove a very heavy African American turnout and vote in his two elections. The Democratic Party seems to think that's just going to continue along automatically. Now, I just can't imagine why anyone thinks that's going to be the case. That was a kind of a special bonus from running and electing the first black president. I saw 90-9 back to a sort of a normal 90-9 African American vote breakdown last night, but I don't know how large the turnout was nationwide.
Oh, nationwide.
I don't know how large the overall turnout was, but Obama got a very high percentage plus a very larger than normal turnout, double bonus. That's not going to necessarily stick around because it happened for Obama.
I mean, there's a lot here to that, too. I think that we can all comment on this as well. I mean, just that when you look at this, there was this attack on voting rights in America. There was the lack of response. People think a lot of lack of response to what happened in Ferguson and around this country, that they thought should have been a much stronger response dealing with those kind of issues. Just a quick aside, I was with a young writer last night talking to him for coffee after around 6 o'clock this evening. Dee Watkins has been a guest on the show, and he told a story. And this, I think, is a story that's emblematic of why people get so frustrated with the system. Dee Watkins, a young guy, teaches college, has written some great stuff. He's an up-and-coming national writer. He was driving down North Avenue. For those of you not in Baltimore, it's a major road in this goes from east to west in the city. He was pulled over by four policemen jumping out of their cars, hands on their guns, because he had a broken taillight. Uh-huh. And people do not see any of this being addressed. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the issue you have. And the unemployment is an issue. And I think that's a huge issue people are facing and don't see it being addressed. And like in other states, like here in Maryland, Brown did not campaign. Took that for granted. And I think those things really hurt him.
Right. I mean, some of the things
and hurt the national vote as well.
No, some of the things you mentioned, I think, are important to recognize. I mean, there was a lot of frustration out there, and especially if you're talking about black voters. You mentioned things like voting rights and Ferguson, and also police interactions and structural unemployment in places like Baltimore. Unfortunately, there's not much that the president does or handles in some of those issues, but again, the perception thereof. And there is something to be said about taking a black vote for granted. Again, if you're expecting that you're going to get 95% of the black vote just by showing up and being a Democrat, you're going to wind up losing. And in those and I agree with some of the comments the caller made. If you look at some of those battles across the country that were very close, places from North Carolina to Louisiana, those really hinged upon the black vote. And so with those slim margins, potential margins of victory, if Democrats are just counting on black folks just to show up, just to vote, just because they're Democrats, they're going to lose. You look at somebody like Larry Hogan, who got 25% of Baltimore City. So just being able to reach out, you may not win the jurisdiction, but at least speak to those issues. I will say one thing about Brown. Again, he actually was in Baltimore that day, but he was at a senior center, and some would say he was actually being inaccessible and ducking the debate that was there. So he was speaking to a senior center in Northwest Baltimore, but not being at the debate. And some people looked at this as sort of the arrogance of Brown, and that he felt that he didn't have to show up to the debate. He felt he didn't have to campaign.
There was a lot of arrogance in his campaign that made some problems, which we'll get into just in a little bit, because I think that was very real. But I wonder what we think. Let me just ask this question, then we'll go back to the phones here. Zoe and Bob and everybody, the role of voter suppression, did that play a role in this election?
It certainly did play a role in places like North Carolina and Georgia, perhaps. I don't know. Played a role in terms of keeping some people from the polls, whether it played a role in getting others out to vote because they were angry about those suppression efforts. I think that remains to be seen. I think that this is something that we're just going to have to deal with going forward. I think that many more states are going to be looking at this, and it's going to be important for 2016 to be vigilant to more attempts.
The gentleman wants you to jump in.
Yeah, I don't know whether voter ID laws played any role. I'll be curious to see if there's any reports coming in from various states as to people being denied and the right to vote, et cetera. But, you know, that's not being addressed. Nothing is being addressed. It's impossible to at this point, the way our discourse works, it's basically impossible to address anything. Any attempt to address the topic is instantly turned into a firestorm of chaos and confusion. We've lost the ability to discuss any. Basically, we've lost the ability to conduct public discussions, in my view.
Mm. You have a thought on this, Jordan, before we jump to the phones?
Oh, well, I don't pay too much attention to that stuff. One side says voter suppression, the other side says voter fraud. I did see a couple of things on Twitter that of electronic machines in Virginia that looked like people were pressing the R and it was going to the D. I don't know. You could argue about this stuff all day.
Well, I think there's two different things, because I think that we saw that in Maryland. That happened a lot in some voting places where people pressed R and it went to D. The machines were screwy in a number of places. Didn't seem to hurt Larry Hogan very much, though. But the other part, though, I think the difference between there's no evidence in this country from every study I've said, and we've had so many debates about this and covering it so deeply. There's no real proof anywhere in America that voter fraud is happening on any massive scale or even a large scale.
Right.
But there are things where throughout New Mexico, in New Mexico, there were hundreds, if not thousands, of Navajo voters, is one example, who were not allowed to vote because they didn't speak English. They only spoke Navajo. Mm-hmm. And they said, we don't have to translate for you, so you can't vote.
Well, then why are we finding thousands of dead people on the voter rolls constantly?
First of all, I haven't seen evidence of that in a major scale, and B, there's no evidence that anybody voted in those people's names.
And here's the important thing to point out here. Again, voter ID is really it's a solution looking for a problem. And again, the instances of voter fraud are very infinitesimal. And the fact is, we actually have low voter turnout in America. We should actually be trying to increase turnout rather than suppressing it. And let's recognize, when you do things like voter ID, part of it, even though on the face of it, it seems race and class and party neutral, we know that it disproportionately affects people of color, people who are of lower financial means. And again, those are people who are more likely to vote Democratic. And so if you look at some of the strategies in Republican states or states where there were seats that were contested, where there was a slim majority or the possibility of winning for Republicans, they looked at these voter ID laws as a way that would also shore up a possible victory.
Go ahead, Zoe. Then I'll go to the phones.
Thanks. Just one more thing on voter ID. You know, it's not just ID laws. It's all sorts of reforms changing the way in which people can vote. So, for example, in North Carolina, there were 227,000 people who used things like early voting, same-day registration, out-of-precinct provisional ballots that have been eliminated since the 2010 elections when those 227,000 people used those methods. And so if you think about the question of whether those people were able to vote on Tuesday in North Carolina, that's another way in which these sort of restrictions around voting may have had an impact on turnout.
And we don't really know that for a fact, but we should look at that. Let's go to the phones here, 410-319-8888. We're going to go to Chris. Chris, you're next. You're on the air. Welcome.
Hi, how you doing, Mark?
Very well, Chris.
No, I was just going to bring up the topic of voter suppression. And it seems to me that it's directed mainly at people of color, and really the poor. And the thing is, to me, it seems like the Democratic platform is vote for me, I'm not a Republican. And that's about it. I don't know that they really do focus on issues. I believe that they should have hammered more away on the minimum wage and universal health care. And it seems to me that they didn't really have a jobs program. I had read early on, years ago, in an article that the Democrats should have had one jobs program after another and just hammered on that fact. And mentioned Bernie Sanders. He was also talking about infrastructure jobs, it would be good paying jobs. And myself, I just don't know where the Democrats stand. I'm neither a Republican or a Democrat, but I believe the government's just dysfunctional.
Well, that's for sure. You know, this is the second caller who's mentioned Bernie Sanders. There is one other Democrat, major Democrat, you can hear making accurate statements in public.
But Bernie's an independent.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, all right. Yeah. There is one Democrat who you can actually hear making accurate statements in public, which is a very unusual experience, and that's Elizabeth Warren. It's very strange to see a Democratic politician say things in public that are accurate. It's a little shocking and weird. She does it all the time. I'm not saying that she is a viable presidential candidate or would be, but when you see her speak in public, you realize no one else ever says anything that's accurate about anything. It's just not done. It's not allowed.
Right.
So she just sits there as the total outlier, and the things she says are accurate. Mm-hmm. Why is she the only person who ever makes an accurate statement? It's just odd. Mm-hmm.
I think this really has a lot to do with going back to Bill Clinton. I mean, he sort of wrote the textbook on how a Democrat gets elected. And so you try to be this stealth Democrat. You try to be this centrist, this perceived as a moderate, although you may have other interests, that you don't speak those as prominently. And so it looks like those people like Warren and others who may be speaking truth get marginalized and are looked at, oh, they can't be national. They can't be national figures. I think the Republican Party, and I think they're calling me an interesting point about vote for me, I'm not a Republican. I think that's kind of accurate because Republicans have done so much damage to their own brand over the last few years that it was easy to do that. Now I think they're recognizing that they have to draw back some of that. They have to kind of walk back from some of those far right positions. Now, some parts of the country, that still is popular, but they have to get away from that.
So, Jordan, let me have a quick thought here. We do have to go to break and move ahead to the more local politics, but go ahead, Jordan, and then a quick thought from Zoe as we go to break.
Just in general, I think there were a couple of good things that maybe populists should be happy about. There, Sean Eldridge, the Democrat, lost in New York very, very badly. He was sort of he's the husband of the New Republic publisher and total carpetbagger. And I think no commitment to economic populism. You know, and in addition, less optimistically, Tom Cotton won, who's sort of he pretends to be a populist, but he's sort of ordained by the war party, Bill Kristol and whatnot. They love him because he's a total hawk. There's good things and bad things.
And Zoe, closing thought for me before we have to run.
Sure. Just to finish on some positive notes, I think we had some positive ballot measures. The legalization of marijuana, the failure of personhood measures in Colorado and North Dakota, paid sick leave, the minimum wage. So I think that there are some good things when we look at issues.
I do, and you wrote some interesting things in Nation about that. They put that giant butt on top of the article, but it was a really good piece. So I'm glad you wrote that. And I appreciate Zoe Carpenter. You always take the time here for the Mark Steiner Show. Zoe is reporter at the Nation's Washington, D.C. Bureau, and we'll be linking to her writing. Jordan Bloom is opinion editor of the Daily Caller, board member of Alumni for Liberty, and a project of the Students for Liberty, and we'll be linking to his work as well. Jordan, I appreciate you always taking the time for us as well. Boss Herman, the Daily Howler, we always link to, one of the best things around here. And he's been coming on the show for 22 years or something ridiculous like that.
I don't believe that.
I don't believe it either. Dr. John Bullock's been in the studio with us as well, professor of political science. John Wesley and any other callers, please hold on. We're coming to our local elections. John, I want to hear what you think about O'Malley. We're going to hit that at the top of the hour. We'll be right back. Do not go away. We continue our discussion of what's happening in the election with more of a local spin, but continuing going back and forth between local and national. We'll be right back. Unforgettable. Though near or far, like a song of love that clings to me.